Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kia ora, welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. I'm Ross Carl, and we've had an All Blacks win, which is a big All Blacks win, a return to form from like 4 weeks ago. So who knows what this All Blacks team is? They're either brilliant or they're not. Who knows? Joined by James Parsons, obviously Blues player, and on the big screen through the wonders of modern technology, Bryn Hall, coming out of the Māori All Blacks camp. How are you, Bryn?
G'day, lads. No, it's been good, mate. I have lost my voice a little bit. We do quite a few huckers here, so giving the old throat head a bit of a run through at the moment. But no, look, it's always great to come in Māori's camp. We've assembled pretty early on. We assembled on the Saturday, and the boys have played the finals for Hawke's Bay and in that Auckland game as well. They've assembled. So no, it's always good getting into camp, mate. And Rotorua always has a nice aroma as well. So it's always good to be back to our roots, mate, and smelling the salt. So no, good to be back, mate.
So yeah, that's right, Rotorua. Strepsils, what do you use to get that throat right for a good haka?
Nah, mate, you've just got to learn, really, as hunger Liam Messi would say. Bruno, you didn't go from the core of your stomach, you went from your throat. So we're getting a few lessons from Liam, and hopefully the voice comes back for our haka at the end of the week.
The koro. Liam Messi.
Yeah, mate, the koro. I'm actually the koro as well. I'm the koro of the backs. I think the average age in our back line is about 22. So, yeah, I bring that average up real nicely.
What, the 26? Like,
yeah, so old.
28, mate. She's old. I'm a dinosaur on this team.
It was a big weekend, wasn't it?
It was huge.
It was a massive weekend for the All Blacks. They had so much to do to improve. And boy, they made a big change. And the big change probably mostly was in the kicking game. Let's start with you on this, Bryn, as a man who, you know, does a lot of kicking. What did you make of it? So many of their kicks were attacking.
Yeah, they were, and they were different kind of attacking kicks. We've previously talked around, their crossfield kicks, and we've talked about the contestable game. Look, there were 28 kicks, but the biggest thing, they actually had 11 attacking kicks. The most kicks, their former kicks, were actually attacking kicks. And I guess what I liked around it is it changed just a little bit. I don't know, Jim, if you saw, but they wanted to get it in the middle of the field, and sometimes I'd hit the three pod, hit out the back to Richie and then all Bodie as well, and just put little kicks in behind as well, just into that space. And then the old Gary Owen, the old Gary Owen inside the 22 and putting kicks up to I guess just put Argentina into a vice. So no, look, I thought they made massive shifts, and I think you got that kind of idea around Fozzie and their messaging around they had a plan around how they were going to play. And I thought they were I thought they did it pretty well. And I think if you're kind of old school, and I saw some of the comments and that kind of stuff, thinking, "Well, we're kicking too much ball, we're kicking too much ball away." But for me, we've talked about previously on the show around the defence and how good the Argentinian defence is. That was a great way how we kind of stifled that and put them under pressure. So we won possession, we won territory, and I think it came back to a lot of the attacking kicks and I guess the structures and the plans that they had in place that they didn't have previously, probably 2 weeks ago.
Well, for me, I think we spoke last week about the chess match, and I said it was going to take 80 minutes to really break them down, and that was part of we said we needed to be kicked early, we needed to make their defence think and adjust so that it would open up opportunities late in the game, and that's exactly what happened. With those kicks, yes, they kicked a lot of attacking kicks, but they actually kicked 75% last time against Argentina of attacking kicks. This time, 71%. But the difference is They only kicked 16 times versus 28 this time. So there was a definite shift in how many kicks they want to do, especially early in the game. And you mentioned down the middle of the park or just in behind. That was purely based, I think, because their nine is in the line defensively.
Yep.
And that's where the space was rather than, you know, and some of them, they weren't always accurate, but they got the job done in the sense that, you know, Argentina had to backtrack, so physically fatiguing, and then it made them think and it slowed that line speed down, which allowed them to sort of build their game. And then from there, I think the biggest part of their game plan that was most effective was their gain line success in their carries, 56% compared to 20-odd percent last time, and that's through 146 carries, so that's a lot, 3 metres per carry. And then you've got your big dogs leading the way. You've got Artie with 14, Barrett with 12, Akira with 10, Kane, the skip, with 9, and Whitelock with 8, and those are your big sort of ball carrying, you know, and your leaders saying, this is, follow me. And then what that led to is a controlled discipline. So it was a 14-7 penalty count, so double to Argentina. And we spoke about the last time when they lost to Argentina, it was a lack of incorrect entry because they weren't winning that gain line carry success. So this time they've got that 56%. You know, some guys like Akira at 80%. So it's an easy clean because you're already over the advantage line. They're having a backtrack. You can get those deep cleans. So then again, defensively, they're going to have to step back another metre, and that just slows their line speed again. Ball up with Aaron and Bodie and Richie, and that was where the game was won. But through that 80-minute chess match and the manipulation they did and the work they did and the energy they sat, because you have to give credit to Argentina, the way they held on that first 40, I don't know how they did it. You know, defensively, they were just holding on. And to go in 10-0, you're like, that's okay, but that was always going to pay dividends late, and that was through skill execution errors, through the defence pressure from Rico and Will Jordan, and then maybe a little fluky intercept, and then obviously the way they finished in the 83rd minute was just tiring bodies against fresh bodies that hadn't had to do the amount of tackles that Argy had.
It seems quite simple, doesn't it? You know, kick with purpose and run with purpose.
It does, but it takes a lot of discipline to stick to it. And they would have learned a lot from the first time they've played, and the discipline to go, right, this is the game plan we're going in with, and they just went with it. And yes, there's been some feedback, why are we kicking so much? But that's the reason we're kicking so much, to manipulate the defence, because what the defence shows you gives you the opportunities to score tries. And those tries came eventually. And then the biggest difference, 100% at line out, we got a try, set piece try off a line out. We ran at 100%, 16 line outs. We ran 100% scrums, and we talked about the importance last week of taking a weapon away from Argentina, and we got those quick hooks, and Artie was out. Mm. He was doing exactly what we spoke about Hoskins, you know, close to the line or further out, and he was doing the exact same, and I thought that was just brilliant to see, because they're like, right, we're going to take that away from you. And then that frustrated the Argentinians, and then they ran at 60% at scrum time because we'd conserved energy when it was on our ball, and then we attacked them on theirs. So it was just all round a great presence and set up by the forward pack, providing a platform, and then an execution of the game plan by the back. So numbers 1 to 23, and you saw how much it meant to them when Paddy went over the line. You saw the celebration from the bench and everyone and what it meant to the coaching group. So they'd built to that week, they'd led to that week, and they just delivered on the night.
Mm. A couple of things on that. One, what Bryn talked about, the old school guys not quite understanding. You know, the defensive lines are so solidly set. Do people need to let go of the romantic notion of free-flowing rugby now? Do they just need to understand that in order to get that, you've got to put in 60-odd minutes of pressure and be creative in the way you approach your attack?
Oh, absolutely. I just think it's a test match. It's called a test match. Mm. So, yes, I think at Mitre 10 Cup level, and even sometimes at Super Rugby level, you know, it can be free-flowing because it's not that test match intensity. But a test match is a test match, and if you don't respect it and you don't work out that it's an art it's a chess match, not checkers. And that's the biggest difference. It takes a lot of thought, a lot of consideration, you know, Monday to Friday to get the performance right and the game plan that you want. But then the discipline, we spoke about England last week, and their discipline to stick to their game plan, and they'll just keep doing, you know it's coming, but even if you do, similar with the Crusaders, you know what's coming, but they're just going to do it, and they back that they can execute it.
Mm. Bryn, how long has this been in the making, the way that modern rugby approaches its attack structure, particularly in the way that defences are shaped through kicking games?
Look, I think it's been there for a while. I think, you know, you go back to probably the 2007 World Cup when South Africa won. It was predominantly, you know, a kicking based game, and then I think it kind of went full circle around the All Blacks and the evolution of our forwards being able to be ball players, and so we were probably a little bit better in that. So we were able to play for about, you know, I think about to that 2011 or 2015 World Cup, you know, we were pretty dominant around our skill execution. And then I think it's gone full circle again, you know, the likes of, you know, you think about England, the British and Irish Lions, Ireland, you know, and their defensive structures have just become a lot better. So I guess the kicking and understanding of how you can implement your kicking game and to stifle teams, to put them under pressure, it's probably been around, I'd probably say for the last, you know, I'd probably say the last 2-3 years. You look at the World Cup semi-final and final, you know, you look at the way, you know, their kicking games have been and how much that final between South Africa and England, you know, you'd have Faf de Klerk pretty much running the game when it came to game management and kicking the ball. And on the other side, you know, you had Ben Youngs doing the exact same thing. So I think it's been around for a while, especially up in the Northern Hemisphere. But I think for us in New Zealand, we find it hard because we're such an attacking brand of rugby that we play. But to play against those teams that have great defensive structures, you've just got to implement the game that we saw on the weekend. You know, trying to use attacking kicks around, putting the ball back into the deep enemy territory, and then being able to back your defence and get your penalties and then go to set piece. But then again, the contestable game, you know, we've got a great halfback that can do that. You know, Nuggie's got a great box kick. You know, so when you've got a guy like that that can implement a game plan that that you saw on the weekend and probably we're moving towards, but I guess having a balance of where we can still run our attack, I think it's been there for a while, but I think the transitioning for the punter, for the casual punter from New Zealand, and understanding that, look, this is what happens when you play against a good defensive team. Jipper alluded to it when it comes to a test, it's a test match. And these are the certain things you have to do to break them down for them when we can have our moments of counter-attack, you know, with the likes of Will getting a couple of tries and, you know, Rico coming on and having that attacking experience probably late in the second half.
But for me on that as well, Bryn, we need to understand we finished with 70% territory, 70% possession. So those kicks are to get the ball back. Mm. So that's why we say they're attacking kicks, is they're to put skills under pressure to get the ball back, to have the ball. So that's what rugby's about, is having the ball. It's not like we're just kicking, which I would say in the first test when we lost, we kicked a little bit aimlessly. We didn't find touch and we kicked long and down their throats and gave them time to come back and set themselves. Whereas this test match, it was with purpose and with accuracy for the most point. But it's not just the kicking that was different. I'd like to allude to Coles's try. Mwanga's bridge pass, that's another aspect of attack where you can get outside the rush D. Argentina rushed up and he didn't even really look. He just caught it and just flung it because he knew someone was there, and Colsey goes over for an easy try, where it's not just the kicking, it's about manipulating and making those guys think, oh, could the kick come? And then they're like, okay, I'm going to commit. And then Mwanga's got the skill set and the ability that we've seen at Super Rugby level, but now at Test match level, to just catch and give, and it's an easy try.
You mentioned Will Jordan.
So I think with that as well, Jip, you know, you talked about it before as well, you know, the game line success. We talked about that previously. Last time we played them, we probably just didn't get that. You know, the likes of their four pack were probably dominating the collisions, and, you know, therefore Nuggie, you know, wasn't allowed to get the ball out. It was slow ball. Got their defensive line got set. So, you know, I think there must have been a massive mindset shift around moving bodies, winning the race.
It's Akira Ioane. Yeah. I mean, you are the trumpeting leader of the Akira Ioane fan club.
I am.
You must have been stoked.
Oh, mate, I was rapt, but not surprised. I've been trumpeting because I believe in what he's done this year for us, but also the amount of hard work he's been putting in behind the scenes for his opportunity. We saw it briefly against the Wallabies, but, man, he was a force. And quite frankly, the growth in his game around his set-piece work, you know, his line-out ability, stealing line-outs, taking line-outs, that this just wasn't part of Aki's game, you know, 2 years ago. And now he's doing it at test match level against, you know, a pretty formidable defensive line-out. And then, you know, his carry, you know, accuracy, but also to get over the game line. We spoke about 56% being great for, you know, the All Blacks as a team, but 80% for him as an individual. He's had the 7 line-out takes, his work to get turnovers, 2 turnovers, 1. 9 out of 10 tackles, tackling at 90%. But the biggest thing is that presence. And there was a moment there where Kremer tried to push Aaron, and he just stepped forward. And there was no dumb pushing or shoving. It was him stepping forward. He got right in his face. He says, I'm here. And straight away, the situation was done. And that's what you want from your six. You know, if it's not your six, you know, Jared Hoiata made a career out of protecting nines and tens. That's why they're all his best friends. But you need that. You need that enforcer. And he didn't do anything silly, but he let Argentina know that we're not going to be pushed around. I'm not going to give away a penalty, but I'm here. And he got right in. And I just thought that was a massive moment. I thought it was just a real special moment for him and his All Black career and where he can go to as that All Black six enforcer.
Mm. Bryn, for you guys, you obviously do a lot of research on Akita, you know, when you're going to play him. Has that changed over the last couple of years when the teams looked at Akita and the threats that he provides as a Crusader?
Oh, look, mate, we've talked about it a lot, and the likes of Hoskins as well. Having that ability to play off the back of the scrum, it's such a weapon. And look, every time we've played Aki or Hoskins, you know, we've had that much preview around scrums, around, you know, close to the line or even exit kind of areas, and how much of a weapon they pose. And the thing that I really enjoyed about Aki is, you know, we've talked around his improvement and his lineouts. You know, he had the most lineout wins as an All Black. You know, so I guess the growth of being a lineout option, a genuine lineout option, and you know, you look back the likes of Loms, you know, Jerome when he was playing as well, he was, you know, great around the lineout options as well. And so, you know, Aki, the great thing that I've really enjoyed about Aki is you know, just his maturity and his growth. You know, I look at last year when he was in the Maldives camp, he had a complete different mindset to where he is now. And I think being back in that Blues environment, dripping. I guess having Hoskins there as well to have that pressure and to have someone there that he guided around and was a great teammate to Hoskins. Look, mate, I think this is going to be a start of a hell of a little spurt for Aki. And look, mate, you know, I had him as my man of the match, and you know, some of the, you've alluded to some of those stats, but you know, 7 lineout wins, which was first for the All Blacks, had 10 carries, which was third. His tackles were 90%. He was 10 tackles. He was the most in the All Blacks, and he had 2 turnovers as well. You know, so, mate, if you're talking about...
Keep it coming, mate. You listen to when I talk?
And look, mate, it's well-deserved. You know, you've been on about it for a very long time, Jim. You've been bloody advocate, been a massive advocate for him. And, you know, look, if he can have stats and play at that kind of standard, then look, mate, that number 6 jersey, it's going to look pretty good on him.
You have to say he's definitely earned his All Blacks squad spot next year. He probably maybe has earned the first test at 6 next year, if you look at that.
I think the biggest shift that he's made is he won't take it for granted, and he won't think like that. You know, I've already seen on his Instagram, he's already on the Watt bike, you know, in his hotel room in the quarantine. You know, that's his mindset's about keeping fit and now working towards a Blues season. So I don't think it's about... he's earned that. I think every player is going to have to earn their spot again, and that's through the performance. So, you know, like Frizzell was pretty clean in the Bledisloes as well here in New Zealand, and when he went over there and he got rested a bit, and then, you know, Aki took his moment. So now there's great competition in that space. And I think the most important thing is it's if they can perform for their clubs, and that's what excites me, if all these Blues players can come and perform for the Blues, and it gives us a great opportunity to achieve, but also for all the other players going back to their franchises. I don't think it is about thinking, oh, I'm there, because that's when you'll fall over, personally.
We also saw Will Jordan get his little coming out moment in an All Black jersey. And, you know, I think a lot of people would have been hoping for a little bit more of this. He got an injury partway through the competition. But wing fullback is a place where you've got that Midas touch for a period of time. And this year, he has been sensational. Where he turns up, the ball turns up. You know, tries happen, things happen. Do we wait too long, Bryn, to see Will Jordan get serious game time, considering the form that he showed in Super Rugby as a fullback wing option off the bench?
I guess you could, yes and no, but I think the biggest thing for Will is that he's actually, you know, he's been hungry. You know, he when he got his opportunity, you know, he came into the environment, you know, it was his first time being in the environment. And look, you had guys that were playing well as well. You had Geordie, who was there, and they had Bodie as well. So, you know, he had to take his time. And I guess the biggest thing around that is that, you know, we've talked around this consistently around boiling and being able to really stir. And when you do get your opportunity, you're hungry. And look, Will has an unbelievable ability to score tries, to be in and around the ball. And, you know, I've seen it at trainings, I've seen it in games. And know, that's one of his biggest weapons. And one guy that I do want to probably give a little bit of pat on the back is David Harvilli around that. You know, those two are great for us, and I know the growth that David Harvilli's helped Will, you know, not just this year, but the last year as well, and, you know, his growth and being able to get his game. So, yeah, look, I think, you know, it was well overdue that performance from Will, and like I said, he's got an uncanny way of being able to score tries, man. He just pops up, and, you know, people would say, you know, it's tinny and that intercept, but, or just an example of that, but, you know, I've seen him do it consistently at trans because he's just got a knack for getting the ball. So it's one of his strengths, and you know, he'll be looking forward to next year, and I think taking that experience and you know, scoring a couple of tries early on in his career.
So he just reads opposition really well. He gets a feeling, and he has a gist.
I don't think it's opposition personally. I think it's the guys inside him. Like, we spoke about Damien McKenzie when he closed off at Eden Park, and he followed Anton Lennett-Brown and Cotterbitty knocked it on when they had a 4-on-1. And if you watch this first try, it's actually Rico and Jack Goodhue put a lot of line speed pressure. And sometimes wingers can hold and not bite in, but he trusted Reeks and Jack to do the business. And then he closed off with them. And because of that defensive pressure from the midfield of the All Blacks, the ball went to ground. He was in a position, because he trusted his teammates and what decisions they'd made, and that created the opportunity. Whereas second one was probably a little bit more, you know, risk versus reward, and he got the reward. But I think he makes good defensive decisions in that wing spot, and he's done it a lot for the Crusaders as well by trusting the guy inside him and their defensive capabilities. And I don't want to make it about Reeks, but I've spoken that, you know, people have questioned his defence at centre, but what his speed brings to putting skill sets under pressure in that centre role defensively is only going to be better and better for him once he gets the reading and understanding of that role better. And he's doing a lot of work around that with Tana Umanga at the Blues. But his speed, and Bryn, correct me if I'm wrong, but his speed off the line to close down and put pressure for that first Will Jordan try was probably not many centres can have that ability to just close down that amount of space that quickly.
Yeah. I'm not sure people understand how fast he is. So he's what, the fastest Blues player of all time over 10 and 40?
Yeah, I don't know that. Like, I'm pretty quick, so I'm not sure. but no, he'd definitely be up there. But like, it's just, if you just watch it again, if you go back and watch and just watch Reeks, and you'll see how his and Jack, to a point, I think it was Jack or Anton, one of the two, and it was Jack, sorry, and then He just flies, and it puts that skill, and it just rushes that pass, and that pass goes to ground, and then they're off. Like, don't get me wrong, like, Will Jordan was exceptional off the bench, but it was a lot of hard work from others that created those opportunities. Not just saying Reeks, I'm saying about the forward pack and the work that had happened the first 60 minutes to create those opportunities. Yes, his name's in bright lights, but I always like to bring it back to the reason why they get those opportunities.
Bryn?
Around that jib, I 100% agree. I think, you know, when you're seeing wingers get intercepts and I guess making that ball and all tackle, it just comes back to everybody in that backs position knowing exactly who they have. So I could probably imagine before those tries, you know, the understanding of exactly who they had and the position of and the people that they had, they knew exactly who they had. So it gives us the likes of, you know, you talk about Rico, his understanding and his speed. When you can give a guy like that assurance and certainty around who he has to go get, then he can use his speed and put his skill set under pressure like he did on the weekend. So the alignment of Jack, you know, Richie, Rico, and then Will, the four of those guys, and then you've also got Bodie in the fullback, giving Will confidence to go hard and go get the ball or go for the ball. It all works good. We've talked around pendulums, around, you know, defensively around the backfield and wingers being on strings and fullbacks being aligned, but it's no different to your front four and your backs. If you're clear and have an understanding of who you need to get, then, you know, you get the rewards of Will getting an intercept or Rico putting people under pressure.
He's got a 14-15 role at the Crusaders. Do you think it's good for him to be in a dual role like that? Obviously, it gives him options. But is there a position that you think he should settle on at some point out of the two?
I think it's good to have that tag of being a 14 and a 15 because if I look at this year, you had Bodie who covered 15, so you need to be able to have the the position to play a winger, but then again, you still want to have the ability to be known as a fullback. So I think it's traditionally, happened. You look at Bender, he was a world-class fullback, but now he ended up being on the wing because Dagger would end up playing at fullback. So it's happened a lot, and I guess it's a transition for, for young fellas coming through to have an understanding that, if you're a fullback, it's great to have that that winger tag as well, and especially to be versatile in an All Blacks team where you can play two positions. It helps, but, we're pretty fortunate at the Crusaders where we've got Davey. He's great. He's a great fullback for us and brings, probably something a little bit different to Will, and Will brings something different to Davey. So for me personally, selfishly, I love having both of them in the team at the same time. So, it brings competition within the team, and it brings the best out of Davey. It brings the best out of Will, and, Sebu's there as well, who'll be on the wing. So it just adds competition for our team. So I think Will, if he can continue to keep playing fullback and wing, which he probably will, it'll be great for him going forward in his future.
With all of the points that were scored and all of the impressive kicking games and attacking games that the All Blacks brought through against Argentina, Argentina did make 10 changes to that side. It was very much not their top team. And it's their top team hasn't beaten the All Blacks before this year. So to put that down to their second team to give it a crack seems a bit tough. What do we read into that side of this game?
I think it's unfair to say second team. It was their third big test in a row. They have built a strong enough squad through, the Hagawaris and obviously other parts of the world to do this. And they weren't, changing it with debutants or guys that haven't performed at international level. But I don't think they've been the same side since Cabelli's been missing. Bryn can allude to that more than myself. But I just don't think their attacking nature and their ability to play has been there since he won that All Blacks test and then hasn't played since. So I think that's been a big catalyst. I think they had a really strong set-piece scrum and they changed both the big boys up front. And maybe that could have been an area almost line-out time as well. There might have been some decisions there. But I think the bulk and the core of the squad was still there to do the job. But I think the All Blacks, we've spoken about, their attacking game, their attacking kicking game, but a lot of their success was based off the back of defence and their defensive pressure and getting reward off that after sapping the energy through that attack. So just like when Argentina won, you wanted to look at why they were successful and not gloss over the fact that they performed really well. I think it's very similar here. I just think the All Blacks didn't allow them to play, didn't allow them to get into their game plan, and they came up with a game plan that just sapped all their energy out of them. They couldn't find a way out of it, and they were disciplined. So they didn't piggyback them out of their territory. The All Blacks controlled their discipline so they couldn't kick penalty goals or exit out of their territory and then march up the field and get another penalty goal and build pressure through scoreboard pressure.
With that in mind and the fact that they did improve over the last 3 weeks, let's get the marking pens out. Bryn, let's start with you. A 50% win record in 2020, but a couple of very high points, a very strong performance against Australia once before losing two, and then a very strong performance against Argentina.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How does this year grade for you? Let's say on an A, B, C, D school marking scale.
I'll probably give them a B minus. And I think that just comes back to results. I think we probably finished the year in the way we probably wanted to start. And look, a 38-0 result against a team that we lost previously.
Funnily enough, I've gone a B minus as well. And I think, because for everything that has happened, if you look at tries scored by the All Blacks, 16, conceded 4. So I think defensively they've shown a lot of mettle. And yeah, they haven't got it right, through scoreboard pressure at times, and that's cost a couple of tests and maybe a little bit of, you know, discipline with red cards and things like that. But I think as a whole, to score 16, concede 4 is a really strong place when you look at the other two teams that are in the championship. You've got RG, they've scored 1 try, 7 conceded. Aussie have scored 3, 9 conceded. I know they've got a game in hand, so that might adjust, but I don't think they're going to get on a positive outlook like the 16-4 of the All Blacks. And I think a B minus is really fair because we've got the Bledisloe.
Yeah.
And I believe we'll have the Tri Nations as well. They've got one hand on it after this weekend's game, but I certainly think they'll have that. And I think 2 trophies were up for grabs, and they've got 2 for an All Black standard. No, it's not an A-plus year, but it's a B minus for me. And I think based on those stats alone, and I think they should be really happy with some of the growth of the new players that have brought in and where it sets them up for 2023.
Do you think Ian Foster will be thinking the same way?
I think so, because I think he'll probably be a little bit hard on himself. I don't know, but I just think when you look at the whole year as a whole and how it's been mixed and matched, and it hasn't been as smooth sailing. And you know, the All Blacks beast is such a slick operation. COVID hasn't allowed it always to be as slick as it has been in the past. So through those trying times, and I think at the end of the day, you know, we talk about outcomes. They've got the trophies. Yes, they lost 2 games and they've run at 50% or whatever. It doesn't really bother me. They've got the silverware. You know, it's just like if I was to win Super Rugby with the Blues and we won it at 50-50, I wouldn't even remember that. I've got the trophy. And I think it's the same in this situation.
The public are a very hard marker on the All Blacks. You know, they expect A-plus all the time. But when you look at the progress made with the way that they stepped up in this game, the public should be probably, you know, throwing them a bone a little bit as well.
Yeah, and I think the All Blacks would expect A++ every time they go on the field. They won't get it, but they're probably a harder marker than the public, believe it or not. They won't probably come out publicly and be that hard on themselves, but internally when they go into reviews, they'll be ruthless. So that needs to be acknowledged. And I think also, like, the public will accept that was a response to say, yeah, we got it wrong, I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope they did for what it was, and not to get caught up in the tactics, because it was a test match. And as I said, chess versus checkers, and they won the chess match and got the checkmate pretty comfortably at 38-0.
The same response has actually been coming out of the Northern Hemisphere about defences and kick chase and constant kicking. If the case is that the public aren't enjoying that style of game, what is the solution for rugby? Is it to carry on in the same way, or is it to make changes to please and appease the public will?
No, I think the game will always evolve. Like, teams will work out how to play, off the back of kicking. So then kicking won't become such a threat. But the way defences run at the moment at international level and Super Rugby level and Premiership level, you have to break it down. You have to break that defence down to create opportunities. So that's the way defences are run. Defences will change, they'll become an innovation in that, and then attacks will have to adjust, because you can only attack what the defence gives you, and then it comes down to option taking of what's right in front of you. So I think there's a difference between a kicking game territory-based and a kicking game attacking. And look, I'm not all for territory-based kicking, but I'm a big believer in contestable and attacking kicks.
It is pretty exciting to see those balls go out wide to Jordy Barrett. You know, they're not always going to hit the mark.
But also, it takes a hell of a skill set to get up in the air and attack the ball and get it back for your team. There's a lot of work for forwards that do to escort and make sure that they don't get the ball back. You know, it's a big part of the game that's trained a hell of a lot more than probably people consider.
Mm. And the bounce of the rugby ball is one of the great things about this game.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you never know. And if you find Grasbrin, you never know what'll happen.
It takes a tremendous amount of skill to execute those kicks. You know, you think about the ones for, we've seen Richie do it in time, Bodie as well, and Geordie getting up there in the air, Will, and a lot of wingers getting up for it. So it takes a massive skill set. And, you know, Jim, I'm really happy you said that. This is what it takes moments to break down teams. you know, the an introduction of attacking kicks. You know, there's so much difference when it comes to, you know, kicking long for territory and kicking it long, especially in like kick battles. But attacking kicks and the skill set that men have to be able to do that, I think it's the way moving forward. But it'll change. It'll change. You know,
of course
teams will figure out. Teams will figure out how to break down defenses. You know, there might be a rule change. You know, we've seen the Jackal rule change in time. So look, there'll be rules that will change it, or someone will figure out something to nullify it. So yeah, I just think it's the way probably it's going to happen in the next probably, you know, 12 to 24 months, unless there's a rule change or someone figures out something drastically to try and beat in defenses.
But you just got to look at it as well. Like, you go back to 96 when Jeff Wilson and Kelly are doing chip and chases. Like, you hardly ever see a chip and chase now because everyone adjusted to, you know, having the winger up and the fullback and that pendulum work of that backfield. You know, your halfback can cover that sometimes as well. So then attacks adjusted because defence is adjusted. So it's never going to be played the same way. And then we've got so many smart minds out there that'll be going, right, okay, that's a pretty good kicking game. How can we use that to our advantage? You know, Argentina might stop putting their nine in their line defensively, which will then take that space away. Things like that, they might just have to adjust defensively, which then will create other opportunities with attacking ball in hand. But we're talking about real physical athletes that are primed and fit and want to put it all out there. And it does take 40 to 60 minutes to start see who's got the biggest engine, who's got the biggest tank to keep going, and how have you manipulated to sap the energy from the opposition to create opportunity. And that's all we saw. It was a great test match. It was a perfect, I think, advert for test match footy.
And that hasn't changed, you know, whether it's Super Rugby or test level. It is a war of attrition in the most part, especially when you look at Super Rugby Aotearoa. Like, the amount of games which came down to that last 20 minutes, which could have gone either way, almost every single one of them.
Oh, easily. But it's also like that war of attrition of squad as well. Like in Super Rugby Aotearoa, whose squad can survive? Who's getting the most injury? Whose players can slip in and it doesn't look any different? It's the same for RG. That may be something that they need to grow, is like, okay, well, we need to create an environment where the next person slips in and it doesn't adjust, it doesn't change too much. And, you know, the All Blacks have used a lot of their squad. So they're just building a nucleus so that, you know, if one falls over closer to World Cup time, well, they've got some experience under the belt and they can slip back in.
That seems to be something the Crusaders have done very well. You guys bring in rookies for like 100 test veterans and nothing changes.
Yeah, well, we're pretty lucky that we've got a pretty good academy system down there, and you know, pretty early on in their career, once they go into the academy, you know, the Crusaders Academy, they'll be in and around our environment. Your academy boys, apprentices, they'll come and be training with us. So they've got a really good understanding of what Super Rugby looks like. And look, when you're in our trainings and, you know, you're in our meetings and you're getting asked questions by coaches and you have an understanding of how we play, then when they come in, you know, I look at the likes, you know, look, who's an example, like Kelly. I look at Kelly, for example. You know, last year he was in our apprentice program, came in for that whole year, didn't play at all, but had learned everything around our structures, around how you hold yourself as a Crusaders person. And so when he came in this year, it was just like he'd been here the whole time. So it's really easy for guys like that when you've got a good understanding around what the environment's like, how you run it. So when you come in, it's just really easy. It's seamless. And I look at the All Blacks, for example. You know, we've done it for years. And you look at the guys that come in really young. They have a good understanding. And when they're ready to play through not only the leaders, but the coaching staff and the structures, they play really well from the get-go. So I think having plans in place like that are great. And, you know, we're pretty lucky that we do it pretty well. And I think the All Blacks do that really well as well.
What about the World Player of the Year nomination as far as the All Blacks are concerned? Is there a player that's come out of this season in such good stead that they're up for World Player of the Year, do you think?
Oh, there is for me. I think a consistent would be Anton Lennox-Brown. He's been consistently performing well in the test matches, but to me there's only one guy and it's the skip. I just think Sam Kane's just been an absolute warrior and a beast. I think captaincy's really brought the best out of him, and he's just led from the front defensively, attacking-wise, and, you know, in a new role. I think sometimes, you know, you can sometimes see performances waver. I think his performances have skyrocketed with those roles, and a little bit of a quiet achiever And that's what you probably want in that seven role. He just gets the business done, rolls his sleeves up. So I think if there was to be a nomination, those two boys would have to be up there.
Bryn?
Yeah, I'd probably just go Sam Kane, if I'm being honest. I think some other players have had good spurts, but I think if we're talking around consistency, around test matches that we've played this year, yeah, I think Sammy lives up to that. And I think to be a world player of the year, you've got to consistently play well and reach the levels of that every single time you play in a test match. And look, I think the biggest thing as well, he's shown a great form of leadership. You know, he's had a lot of heat in the media, and you know, I think on the weekend showed his leadership in not only him but the coaching staff and the leaders around him. So, but I think for yeah, world player of the year, I'd probably go Sammy. He'd probably be the only one that I'd pick from the All Blacks, who's shown a lot of consistency and played really well this year.
Now, it is awards season right now, and the Scucks of the Year could be one of the things that comes really importantly out of this episode of Aotearoa Rugby Pod. The Scucks of the Year brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped is a bunch of tools, cleansing products, shaving products, moisturising products to help a man look after all of the places, including downstairs, that you need to look after, keep safe and looking nice and trim. Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0 is the latest tool. You've got to go out there and have a look at it. Keeping upstairs looking nice and trim is important as well. Chipper, who is the most Scucks, most often clean-shaven, haircut, always done beautifully, man, for you in New Zealand rugby?
Oh, well, obviously I'm going to go for someone at the Blues. Yeah, I've got a couple of nominations. You know, you've got Aki and Paddy, who did the hair dye and sort of followed that trend, and you got Tom Robinson, who really looks after his locks and you know, likes to take care of himself. You got Sammy Knock running in and around there, but I think one man that is just meticulous, and I think we've seen it in a number of hair dyes and the manicured beard, and you know, loves getting his t-shirt off on Instagram and getting the rig out, is Rico Ioane. So for me, Reeks takes the Scucks of the Year award.
Scucks of the Year. What about for you, Bryn? Arguably should be up for the Manscaped Scucks of the Year himself, Bryn Hall. Who are you putting up for this Scucks of the Year?
Look, I'm going for George Bridge. Look, I've seen him without a shirt on.
The wonders of modern technology, we've lost Bryn again. But has Manscaped Man of the Year, George Bridge?
Yeah, he's a big fan of Bridgie. So he just mentioned there, I don't know if we'll be able to edit it in, but he said he shaves from everything from the neck down, so he's well manicured by the sounds of things. So he'd probably have to take the cake. He probably gets the award based on that
effort 100%.
And attention to detail.
Yeah, get that man a Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0. There'll be plenty of detailing being done.
Yeah, well, he'll make his life easier, I'd say.
And you can get 20% off if you use the code RUGBY. You'll also get free shipping. Go to the Manscaped website and you'll find all of those things. So what about next year's up-and-coming player? Who's the person you're looking out for that could make it all the way to the All Blacks?
I think, well, he's already in the All Blacks, but you know, sort of Bryn touched on it, is Cullen Grace. I think, you know, he's had a really strong year. A couple of injuries probably slowed him down a little bit, and, you know, he managed to slip into the ABs. But, you know, that loose forward trio spot's becoming hot property at the moment. And I think if he can back it up with a really good year, you know, because he won't be the unknown going into the Super Rugby Aotearoa, and then obviously with Aussie as well. So, you know, it's a big year for him to backing it up when, you know, everyone will be watching tape and judging from what they saw last year. So, look, he's definitely a raw talent, and, you know, he's only going to get better with age, but I think another season under his belt, he could be a real force in that loose forward trio.
Yeah, there were some really good players coming up through Mitre 10 Cup this year as well. What did you make of Tasman taking out that win on the weekend?
Oh, I was gutted because I'd probably pumped Auckland up too much, and, you know, I suppose the irony is the set piece that I was so confident that Auckland were going to deliver, it failed for them. You know, line-out time, they're running, you know, 8 out of 13, and scrum time, a few penalties. And Tasman, on the other hand, Quinton Strange, you know, there's a reason he's been called into the All Blacks, is his ability. He was clean on their ball, played at tempo, but also they stole a lot of Auckland's ball and they're strong at scrum time. An ex-Auckland man and Isi Tuonga Fassi was pretty impressive in a Tasman jersey. So I think the set piece won it, but also their relentless nature in the defence. They really rushed up and it didn't allow that ball to get to Ray Arce and AJ Lamb and put, you know, Simon Hickey and Harry Plummer under pressure. And they had to step in a lot of times, and they normally step back into Haveli and Renton and and that's when, you know, we spoke about the importance of the breakdown, and I thought Renton, Haveli, that's Sione Haveli, but also David Haveli came up with key turnovers at key times, whereas Auckland actually won more breakdown turnovers, but they weren't at such crucial times. Tasman had got a lot of theirs when Auckland were hot on attack in the 22. You have to credit Auckland's ability to still be in the game and have the ability to win it when they'd had two yellow cards, they had no functioning set piece, and they're really playing on the back foot the whole game. It shows that they probably were the better team on paper and throughout the year, but on the day they just couldn't execute their skills under pressure, and Tasman were too good.
That drop goal went wide. It could have been a different story.
I know. I really wanted to see it go over, and he looked pretty calm and confident under it, but maybe a little bit too early, do you think? At 77 minutes, 78 minutes, I thought they could have maybe charged their arm a little bit to try and score points, but they hadn't broken down that defence. As much as they'd like, and you know, to be kept, I suppose, tryless when Auckland have just scored multiple tries against everyone. We said they're both the two best defensive teams on the day, and you know, Tasman had the better of the defence, a lot less missed tackles, and a cleaner percentage there. So defence wins championships, and it backs it up again.
They were probably well aware that they'd given away a few turnovers, and you have to make the most of your spot, and they were in a perfect spot for the droppy. You know, they took a few phases, and Simon Hickey was sitting back in that pocket, wasn't he, for a little while.
Yeah.
But, you know, I suppose if you have been aware of the fact that you've turned over some ball in their 22 along the way, you probably don't want to be mucking around too much.
Oh, no, absolutely, and I think you're right. You know, Renton had got one, Sione Haveli had got one, and Davey Haveli had got one only minutes earlier before they got back down there. So, look, I agree. Like, I just was... thought could have chanced their arm a little bit more, but he probably, as you say, wasn't confident in the collisions area, and looked not to be. Pretty gutting for them, but pretty impressive for Tasman going back-to-back. It's not easily done, and I think they're the only second team to do it.
And pretty gutting to lose Bryn Hall off the big screen as well, because he called it.
Oh, he did, and I'm pretty happy that he's not here, because I wouldn't be hearing the end of it. But, you know, he did say they'll find a way, and they certainly did. They showed a lot of character, and I spoke about their leaders last week and the character they showed to fight their way to the final, and they continued that fight on and got the job done.
And in the other game, I mean, Hawke's Bay, what can you say about Hawke's Bay? They've done so well.
Yeah, well, Northland were in it, weren't they? And they really fought hard at 17-all at half time, but then the minutes 40 to 51 where Hawke's Bay scored two converted tries and they sort of bounced out to a lead, and then Ash Dixon scored one about 6 or 7 minutes later. I think their finals experience, you know, they've had a lot of times they've gone to the championship final and fallen short. And I think that experience, their experience in their pack, and I suppose just their accuracy, I felt like Northland wanted it. They wanted it so much that they gave away a few silly penalties. I think if I look here, the penalty count was 12-5, so 12 to Northland and only 5 to Hawke's Bay. So Hawke's Bay just didn't give them much to live off, and Northland gave Hawke's Bay plenty to live off. And that sort of first 20 minutes after half-time was the making or breaking that game. Great fighters, Northland, but I think the rightful champions won on the night.
It would be a pity to lose that game if next year they were to get rid of the Premiership Championship structure, because it was a good game to watch. The semis and the finals of the Championship keep so many people within New Zealand rugby interested when, you know, they could fall by the wayside with 2 weeks to go in the competition. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think, but with the if they go to the two pools, it's going to create a real North versus South rivalry, which I think will have a similar passion and understanding of, you know, even though when whoever wins the North final and whoever wins the South final, I think all those regions will get behind to see the North team win or the South team win. Do you know what I mean? I still think there's a real adage for if they do go down that route. If they keep it at this route, I think it's good as well. I think it's been the best Mitre 10 Cup and the best, I suppose, advert for both the Premiership and Championship pools that there's ever been. So in a pretty funny year, it's been an exceptional competition.
Yeah, if it's working, don't change it. I think along the way, rugby has made its mistakes of constantly changing instead of sticking to a competition that is consistent and understandable and people have gotten used to. And we've got to a point now where the have-nots are as enjoyable to watch as the haves. And that's working.
Yeah, but I mean, it has to be affordable, doesn't it? And we all want our Mitre 10 Cup to stay around. So I think the powers that be have got to make some decisions around finances. And if the finances say that, you know, we've got to cut down on travel costs and this is a way that we can keep all 14 teams alive and playing the game we love, because everyone loves Mitre 10 Cup, for me, I just want it to survive. So whatever it looks like, I'm all on for jumping into it.
We need a big benefactor. We need someone just to drop some cash.
Yeah, well, you never know, hopefully. Hopefully. Yeah.
But it has been a wonderful year of rugby as far as that's concerned.
Honestly, in a crazy year, it's just been an exceptional, entertaining brand of footy the whole way through. And, you know, as a player and as a fan, just feel so fortunate to be able to do do our job and entertain our fans and I suppose our stakeholders alike. Throughout the year, it's been pretty exceptional. And I think everyone's really got back to loving the game of footy and all for the right reasons.
There is still one really important game to go, though.
Yes.
One very important game, Australia versus Argentina.
Yes. Oh, and the Pacifica, Moana Pacifica, yes, and New Zealand, yes. Māori. But I think with the commanding performance that the All Blacks put on and there's not so much, like if they'd just won and it was based on bonus points, I think Australia have a lot to lose and Argentina have plenty to gain going into their fourth big test. If they can pick up a win, I think that'll be a massive finish to their tour. If they get beaten comfortably, then maybe it's not as powerful, and then they maybe do need to look at their depth and their ability, because in a World Cup, you've got to win 7 big test matches, you know, so you've got to have that ability to go the distance and use your squad. Then the Wallabies, you know, they've beaten the All Blacks, they've had a draw against the All Blacks, they've had a draw against RG. I think, you know, they really need to win this test to make it feel like they've progressed and they're on the right track to where they want to go. And you want to see the shifts in their game plan that we saw in the All Blacks game plan to break down the Argentinian defence. Mm.
They've also got the uncertainty of next year for them as well. They don't have the same kind of competition laid out the way that we do. It's going to be difficult for them to, you know, to build on something that has been growing over the last 4 or 5 years, as far as the Juarez and the Pumas.
Yeah. I think we just need to get probably to the end of this year, take stock, and you just know that no one wants to see that die. Mm. So there'll be a lot of work going in behind the scenes to make sure that they have something to function, because it's shown their experience in Super Rugby has given them the ability and belief to compete at international level. And now I think that is complete with the Test match win against the All Blacks. And now it's not so much of a stigma. There'll be more of a focus on just maybe playing and taking the emotion out of it and trying to get into that international chess match battle week in, week out, not just one-off, you know, spikes of emotion. It has to, you know, get that consistency across the game.
They might also benefit, though, from not having that long Super Rugby season where they're constantly on the road, and that's a pretty tiring old thing. We saw the freshness, I suppose, that they came in with into this series that allowed them to be as successful as they were.
Oh, absolutely. They probably benefited this year, but you wouldn't want to believe you could benefit on that for a number of years, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You need to be playing footy to be good at footy. It's like anything. If you just walk away from playing golf for 2 months, you're not going to be as good as you were. So, you know, to be a good rugby player, you have to be playing rugby.
I'd argue that point. I always play my best game in the first game back, and then it turns to shit.
That's what I'm saying. That's a spike. We need that consistency. And the only way you can get consistency is by playing and doing it week in, week out.
Consistently in the rough.
Yeah. But if you're consistently there, you're consistent.
Yeah, that's right. What about the Māori All Blacks versus Moana Pacifica? I would have thought Moana Pacifica going as slight favourites with the names on paper.
I definitely would think that maybe on paper. And, I spoke to Tana and he really wants to make it about who they're playing for, what they're playing for, and, you know, but enjoying the week and connecting as a group. And not so much a barbarian style, but a little bit of a barbarian style. But then, the opposite has come out of the Maldives camp and the fact that, you know, Tony Brown said, no, we're all business. It's a test match. It's going to be physical. There's not going to be helter-skelter throwing the ball around. We're going to be direct carries early. We're going to really set a platform and do exactly what we said the All Blacks did, is try and manipulate the defence to open up opportunities for them late in the game. So there hasn't been too much coming out of the Moana Pacifica camp, which would make me a little bit nervous for the Maldives, but I think what's coming out of the Maldives camp is pretty powerful, and they really want to represent what they're about and who they're playing for in a really physical and dominant performance. So it sets it up for an exciting fixture, because I think the Moana Pacifica want to play, and I think the Maldives want to set a standard for them in their 2020 season.
And hopefully we can set a wonderful standard by having a great game and see this fixture become a consistent element.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, I just think after this year and the work that's gone on behind the scenes, I just hope the people that have been behind the scenes, you know, just take stock, give themselves a pat on the back, have a little bit of a break, and then build towards 2021 from there.
So it has been a hard year like that. The people behind the scenes at New Zealand Rugby, at Sky, at all these places,
massive,
with constant changes to try to make things work logistically, to try to make sure that people are in jobs, that people have rugby to watch. Mm. You know, it's been a tough year all round, and they've come out of it really well.
And I think that's why I want to keep acknowledging it, because they've gone above and beyond to allow us to play, but provide a product to our fans and promote our game in such a positive light. And as you say, all across the ball, Sky, NZR, NZRPA, all of them have worked really hard. All the unions and their boards, struggling times, and we've managed to put out a product and teams week in, week out, when allowed by the government, pretty successfully, I believe.
Mm, the players have taken sacrifices too, pay cuts and things like that to get by, you know.
Yeah.
That's not easy. Your finances are planned well in advance. You can't just do that, you know. People, I don't think, necessarily understand that the players have made quite a big sacrifice there too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. We have. There's no doubt. We're still at a pay cut pay, but that's part of the beast. And our main focus after lockdown is making sure that we provide an entertaining product that people wanted to turn up to, and I think we've done that.
And looking next year at Super Rugby Aotearoa, people will be hanging on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And now we've got to back it up. You know, we have a massive preseason. We get a short break, but we're back into it on Jan 6, I think, all super teams, and all vying for that trophy again, and then vying for the one between the Trans-Tasman. So it's about the preparation and making sure that we turn up on day one and great conditions so that we can provide that product again, because I think the lockdown showed that where you could push yourself and your body with limited resources. So I think that's exciting for where we can go to leading into preseason.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.